Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
We're in space today. Mike and Mom, Mission Control, and George, who can do it all. It is episode 11, season 2 of Star Trek. The AfterBuzz starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Flying through space, how's everyone living? How's everyone doing out there? My name is Lobo Boyce. I am in the big boy chair. Christian Blatt is on assignment. And it's also opening day for the New York Mets. It could be collated. We're not really sure. Thank you for joining us at Star Trek, the AfterBuzz Star Trek Weekly. It was called at one point, but it's a Star Trek AfterBuzz show for a Star Trek Discovery. Now, before we get into everything, I want to introduce my fantastic panel to my immediate left. She is a very, very funny comedian. Please welcome, for the first time, Miss Nikki Bailey.
Yes!
I'm very excited to be here. I'm a diehard Star Trek fan. Cannot wait to get my chat on.
Okay, you're diehard, but day one. Day one?
Day one.
So what's your favorite franchise?
My favorite franchise is TNG, The Next Generation.
Ah, Discovery! I'm just kidding. TNG is definitely a classic one. I can't knock for that. And to the left, we have the man himself, Frank Moran.
Oh, hey, everybody. There you go. I think Christian was wearing a red shirt when he left, so I'm...
Oh,
worried.
Yeah.
I'm worried for him.
Why did he beat him down? We had no idea how he did that. Oh, so, Christian will be back next week. Sure.
Nikki, favorite Star Trek character in The Next Generation? Who is your person?
Okay. Don't laugh at me.
All right.
Wesley Crusher.
No!
What?
Only because, so I grew up watching The Next Generation. I had a huge crush on him. And I know everybody hates on Wesley Crusher. But I loved him. I mean, if I had to say, if like aside from Wesley, because he's not everybody's favorite, obviously, it would be Data. So
nice. Did you like what they did with Wesley? Because first when they went to Starfleet, you're like, all right, he's kind of going to go into the Academy. That's great. But then he leaves that and he gets involved with the Traveler. Do you like where they kind of left Wesley?
No, I was heartbroken. First of all, like, no, they should have, like, there was no resolution. I don't know whatever happened to Wesley. And in the movies, he didn't come back or anything. What happened to Wesley? I have created a story about what happened to Wesley in my mind.
Okay.
But, it feels very unresolved still. Like, how many, 20 years later, 30 years later, whatever.
There is a cutting room scene because he's supposedly at the wedding of Riker and Troy in Insurrection. But it never made it into the final cut.
Oh, we needed that. They should have put it back.
Coming soon, what happened to Wesley. I want to thank you for joining the panel, Nikki. Even though Christian's not here this week, he'll be back next week. So you're on addition, not a replacement. So I'm so glad you're here to be part of the full.
I'm glad to be here, too.
So let's get right into it. Star Trek Season 2, Episode 11, Discovery. A Perpetual Infinity was the name of the episode. Overall impressions, starting with you, Frank. What do you think of the episode?
I am a sucker for time travel stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's I love them. This was interesting. It definitely escalated some stuff, and it's always great to see Giorgio kicking butt. Michelle Yeoh can do no wrong.
I did yell "Go Michelle" in the middle of the fight scene with Leland. I am so emotional from this episode with Michael seeing her mom and everything she went through in the last episode, and then this episode seeing her mom, and it was such a journey, and I cried. I did.
You did. It was pretty
good. I did.
Yeah. I have a cold black heart. I never cry in things, but I was like, you know what? If I had one, I could totally see me crying there.
Yeah.
I actually like this episode a lot. A lot of emotional things. In fact, towards the end, you got a little bit of that little fight action scene. So you got something for everyone. Mm-hmm. It was pretty awesome. But I want to give a shout out to the chat. Beta Artemis, Stress Free K, Daniel Brown, all of us. All the regulars, all the usual suspects in the chat today, how is everyone doing? If you have a question, you guys can interact too. And if you want to support the show, there is a super chat button. Click that, have your thing said and broadcasted for everyone. So let's get right into it. The Red Angel, Dr. Gabriel Burnham. Now, last week, we're a little surprised. We ended with the mom, is that you? But now we're getting a little bit more of the relationship. Now, Nick, let me ask you this. How was it seeing Michael and her mommy issues?
You know, all women have mommy issues. I don't know if you guys know this. I don't know if men do, but all women have mommy issues.
Intuition.
Some of it. I mean, so it's just moms are hard. Mother-daughter relationships are hard. I think it was so beautiful, though. Like, I loved Michael's tears. Like, I mean, this is such a sentimental, weird thing to say, but she cried so beautifully. And, and like, the determination she had to get down there to see her mom, I totally get that. Like, yes, you're going to, like, let me see my mother. It was so emotional. I just loved it. Yeah.
Right?
It's, this is almost, with the little snippets that we saw of the backstory that leading her to getting flung 950 years into the future, I almost rather wish we would have been able to follow her point of view more throughout the episode and see more of what she experienced rather than just hear about it in a capsulized version. Because it was really intriguing to see her go back and touch these events and more so that we found out through the course of the episode that she had been able to see more of Burnham's life events. Which I didn't realize the Red Angel suit would have like a stealth mode. Because how was that just sneaking in?
Yeah.
Right. Like it made her omnipotent or omnipresent or something.
Omniscient?
Like she could see everything. That was weird.
One of the SAT words. I'm kind of with you, Frank. I know having the opportunity to see her point of view would actually make that line later on when she goes, "Time is savage," hit that much more, being so far flung in the future. Like time travel, I'm a big nut for like immortal movies and TV shows and stuff like that, and that's always the worst things about it. You're alive forever, but everything passes around you, all that decay and stuff like that. So we had Dr. Gabriel when she was being asked to see the Captain Pike, but said specifically, "I don't want to see Michael." What was the first thing that was on your mind? Start with you, Nikki.
Well, my mom passed away, so, like, the first thing that was on my mind was, like, that is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, like, wouldn't she want to see her daughter right away? My second thought, though, was, what if something happens? Like, what if if she sees, you know, if she was going to see Michael, would that then, like, mess up the timeline in some way? So I was, like, wondering if they were going to go somewhere with, like, if they saw each other, it would create a discontinuity in the timeline or something. I don't know. I was wondering if that's why they were doing it. But I'm glad that she did eventually get to see her. So.
Sure. Frank?
I think if we had seen more of the episode from her point of view and saw the process of her seeing Michael die a variety of times and her going back to save it, you could understand, like, the callousness that she had to build up within herself.
Yeah.
That to see her daughter would be just, you know, it's like it would tear down the walls that she had built up, and she needs to stay on task.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like hearing it this way, it kind of does leave a little bit more like, well, why doesn't she want to see me? And you do find out the answer as the episode goes on, but I don't know if it had as much of a, I don't know if I would have, you could understand more the point of view immediately if you had seen more from her point of view.
So over the course of the season and a half now, or almost two seasons, we've seen Michael, and we've seen her Vulcan family, and her mom. Did today's events of this episode even impact your opinion of her characterization of Michael, seeing how she interacted with her mom and her Vulcan mom and her dad and Georgiou almost too, because that was a mother figure as well, right?
Yeah, it's I mean the opportunity to meet your mother when you thought she'd been dead for at least 20-odd years. I mean, that's a fantastic opportunity to get to see that. But knowing that it is such a brief moment in time that you get to have, especially because Burnham, she wants to save everybody. We've already seen that demonstrated, and you know, to some success and to some not. But you know that if her mother's in danger, more than anybody, she'd want to do everything she could to save her. And to realize that her mom, while she would love to be with Burnham, still realizes that the bigger mission, the larger mission, as I say, takes precedence. So she knows she also has to say goodbye to her too, at least for now.
Yeah, I felt like the fact that they spent so much time sort of showing us Burnham's character, this character defect of always wanting to save everyone, that they spent so much time on that made her inability to save her mother that much more heartbreaking.
Right.
You know, it's such a core part of who she is, this drive to save. So obviously she was not going to just let her mom go, but there was no way. I don't think it would have worked if... It would have been so awkward if or weird if they had allowed her to stay. And I think that this gives us a wonderful place to go from here in terms of, you know, what's going to drive Burnham now.
For sure.
Nikki, I'm kind of curious. Somebody who loves The Next Generation. I mean, it starts off as an ensemble show, but as the seasons go on, it really is more Picard, Data, even Worf with a lot of the Klingon episodes, they kind of rise to the forefront in terms of who the writers are really servicing a lot. For you, do you like a Discovery? Because it's really Burnham focused. Do you enjoy that, or do you kind of miss, or you wish more of the ensemble had an opportunity to shine as much as she does?
You know, I like it. And most of why I like it is just because I'm excited to see a black woman be the star of a Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. But Tilly is so amazing that I want more Tilly. Like, and I also really love that they gave Saru so much time this season too. So I would like more of the ensemble piece. You know, like I'm really interested in, like, and I really, you know, I really feel like it would serve Burnham's story to understand more of how she interacts with everybody else on the crew. So I think that they should give us a little more ensemble. I would love a little more ensemble time.
That's fair. I want to give a shout out to Daniel Brown supporting us, hitting that super chat button. Thank you so much for your financial support. Before we move on to our next topic, our friend Frank has a special message for us.
Oh,
all fans out there.
Holy cow.
In fresh, space.
Yes, fresh from Starfleet. They wanted to let us know there that, folks, we do a lot of great shows here at AfterBuzz. And we cover a lot of fantastic TV shows. And, you know, we really appreciate you watching all this and helping us become the ESPN of TV talk. But we also need some help as well. So we're asking if you can, if you're watching on YouTube, if you can subscribe and give us a nice big like. If you're on iTunes, give us those 5-star ratings. But whatever you're watching, comment, get involved in the conversation. I mean, Flo's got that chat up and running.
Yeah, we got the chat going. Stress BK, Beta Artemis, what's up?
Yeah, get involved. We love to hear what you're thinking. That gives us ways to bounce off of you and interact with you, and that's what we enjoy doing the most. So, meantime, though, keep watching our shows. Thank you for letting us do what we love to do, and continue to enjoy the show.
Oh, thank you so much. So,
oh, thanks, Steph. Thank you.
That was great. That was smooth. That was great. I mean, I'm sold. Let's talk about my favorite part of the episode, the espionage on around that sphere data, right? So now we have the emotional connection of why it's important for the Red Angel, but now we have that ticking time bomb, right? The transfer of the sphere data. What's the implications? What do you think is going to happen with that? I really want to see your opinion on this one, Nikki, because you were on the edge of seat with I am. Like, who has it? Who's helping out? How long the download's happening? What's your thoughts?
You know, I was actually, like, I was confused for a moment just because I wasn't sure what the little red thing was doing. But then once I understood it, I knew that Georgia was going to come through and fight for right. Like, I knew she was going to fight for the right, that she was going to be on the right side of the future, history, whatever. I knew she would. And so I was really, like, I was happy to see that she was stopping it. But I think that, what did it get, like 51%?
54%.
So what can Control do with that? Although I do have a question, though. Like, how was Control able to take over Leland's body?
They use some sort of, like, you know, they inject nanites into him, I assume, that the Control is not controlling those?
It looked like that, but also, how did he get tied down? I guess
right. That was my question. Yes. I said to you, like, how did he get tied down?
He just tripped and fell. Oh no!
No, that's true. Yeah, because you get the things in his eyes, which he seemed totally fine. Like, you got two big gauges stuck in your eyes.
Right. Yeah,
I would think, like, man, that's rough. But all of a sudden he wakes up and he's tied up and his eyes look fine.
Right.
That is a good point. You know, I was giving Leland flack last week for being so weak and ineffective, but compromised Leland is pretty fun. I can't lie, seeing him all evil and stuff.
So it was the most, like, authoritative that he's been,
yeah.
And, like, confident,
right. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, and deceitful. It's like, all right, where was this Leland? I never saw him, like, this in control of everything any other time this season.
Right. And I feel like he totally sold it. And,
but I also thought it was, like, a big indication to Georgia. It's like, yeah, this
right.
is it.
Yeah, Georgia was like, wait a minute. He did not have on his big boy panties before. How is he possibly, yes. How is he possibly
what
being
does that
this
even
guy
look
now?
Like?
Yeah.
Big boy panties. But we saw him interact with Ash first, saying, look, we want you to go over to the Discovery and, like, help to download that data. And you saw Ash kind of go, like, well, I don't know if I should, but that is the mission. I'm not going to say no. I always thought that Ash has a thankless role here on Star Trek. He's been, like, possessed. He's had the thing with Michael or whatever. Did it surprise you that he actually went through and did it anyway? That he didn't stop and say, this isn't right? Does that sound like anything that would be on character for him?
Well, he did stop because you saw him a couple times that he had the sure. control thing. And he was going to do it, and then he stops. And then even tells Leland, he goes, this doesn't seem right. I can't do this. I can't do this right now. I can't do what you're asking me to do.
Right. But the fact he went and tried and attempted, like, he even went forward and got to the room and was like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's him being around the crew.
Sure.
I mean, and see what the picture that Leland's painting of Burnham and her perspective, and then actually seeing them all bouncing ideas there as they're talking about what to do with this. I think it made him realize that, yeah, this is not Burnham out of control. This is truly a dangerous threat that we need to take care of.
And Burnham called him out last week about, you know, like, you're telling everybody who you are with every second you stay in Section 31, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that that probably had some impact, too, that he was like, wait, is this the guy I want to be?
Yeah.
And no, it's not. And I'm glad that that happened because I worry about Ash, and I want them to get back together. So I want them to be together. So
I wanted to follow up on this, but first I want to give a shout out to John Saunders supporting us in the chat with the super chat function. You're amazing. Are you still shipping Ash and Michael?
I am shipping Ash and Michael.
Go on.
I like their Well, I don't know if there's actually chemistry, but I want there to be chemistry.
He's got a baby.
They're both
Klingon baby.
I know he's got a Klingon baby. But no, I feel like. She really gets him, and he's been the only person up until recently who she really lets in, and I like it when we get to see more of Burnham as this, like, you know, woman with feelings and the desire and the need for connection. So, like, I want them to work.
I would say season one, having Michael grow and accepting love was like, all right, that made me feel kind of woman fuzzies, but still, after all that stuff, you're still down.
I'm still
the
down
realm
for
everything.
It.
You're just like,
I'm still down for it.
Wow, that's like an optimist, romantic. I don't know what the word is there, but props. What about you? Are you shipping anybody?
I don't. I mean, certainly know that Michelle Yeoh is going to be for the Section 31 show. She's got that built around her. I don't know if Tyler's going to be in it, but there's a little bit of interaction this episode.
Yeah.
She's telling him to watch the download, find out what Leland's up to, and their banter back and forth. I was like, all right, if Tyler does come over to a Section 31 show, I would like to see more of the banter between the two of them.
Yeah, yeah. I like the fact that Georgia was all liberated. And speaking of...
But do you... That's the... It's... I mean, certainly she's going to have her own show. And sure. So you want her to have... That not to be totally the Terran Giorgio. You want to have her see her at least some redeeming qualities, some humanity in her.
Mm-hmm. Which we saw some tonight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A little bit. Yep.
But I also feel like, I want to see some of the homework at least. Because
okay.
All we've seen of her this season, I've talked to Michael a few times. And then she kind of has, it was great to see her come over to ostensibly the side of the angels. But I also feel like we didn't really got to see her at all this season have any... We never saw things from her point of view. I mean, and that's it's not Section 31 show.
Yeah.
But it's also feel like we missed out on a lot of like why she is starting to soften and maybe have a change of heart a little bit.
Sure.
I don't know.
I feel like they're setting up the Section 31 show, but I think even Taryn Georgia loved Michael.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in whatever way they love in that universe, I think that she really does have like genuine feelings. So.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm glad that they're showing us a little bit of that now. I would like to see a little bit more of her evil side come out. I would like to see her, like, you know, like she was just a little too good this episode, I think. Like, she was a little too, I'm on the good guys team. And I'm like, come on. I think she's playing a longer game.
Yeah.
And so we're going to find out her longer game on the new series, I guess. But, yeah.
Can villains have good days, though? Are they allowed to be nice for a whole day, or...
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like any monster or villain, I mean, they're not that 24/7. There are things that they do care about.
Yeah.
And certainly the best ones that you, those are the best types of villains because then they make you see at least some humanity in them, which can give you a chance to like at least root for them in some respect.
Right, because you can't, you're not going to watch a show where you actually hate the character, right?
Fair enough.
So like you have to have some reason to love her. And plus villains have layers just like everyone else.
That's true. And I guess my next question is throughout the season when we saw Giorgio step into the good side with the fight scenes or even with helping out Michael escape sometimes, do you think that's a bit too much? Do you think she's like maybe flirting a bit too much with being good and not being that morally ambiguous character we love?
I did think that, I felt like she had genuine emotion, genuine care for Burnham. I, like I said, though, I think that she's playing a long game, and I think that none of her goodness is just goodness.
Fair enough.
Like, I think it's probably more calculated than that.
Mm-hmm. So. I am curious about the conversation, because probably one of my favorite scenes was the conversation between Giorgio and Dr. Burnham.
Okay.
And... It where she says, "Oh yeah, I know you. You know you've risked everything to help save my daughter," And the conversation, she's like, oh, you mistake me for the prime version of Giorgio. But it feels like Dr. Burnham's response is like, I feel like she knows that the Giorgio she's talking to is really from the Terran Empire, and that she knows that Giorgio does things past this conversation that's going to actually prove how close she is to Burnham.
Fair enough. That's,
yeah, I like that. I agree.
That's
yeah.
a very good note. I was going to say, stepping back, when Leland tried to appeal to her, not insecurity, what's the opposite word?
Her ego.
Her ego.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Thank you.
He was all up in her ego.
He was all up in her ego. Like, you know, you're so smart. You can do it. You're amazing. You know, hashtag winning. I thought there was going to be a double cross, but it was a triple cross. It was kind of like, all right, this doesn't seem right. She pulls outside and goes, hey, Ash, secure channel. What's going on with this guy? He's not the same guy that we know, right? So I guess my question is then, had Leland not been compromised, just speculation at this point, what did you think that Giorgio's long game would have been? Like, had he just been the normal, like, uncontrolled?
I think Leland as control
yeah.
has her number. She wants to be the most powerful woman in the universe again.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, I feel like Leland wasn't compromised. I mean, he's... I don't know. He's such a knucklehead.
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like Giorgio would have just ran around him and did what she wanted to do anyway. And it does seem, I don't think Section 31 or this, I think taking Leland as control out of it,
yeah.
I think everybody would realize the danger of control getting a hold of this, mm-hmm. The sphere data.
Yeah. A stress-free K in the chat says, Giorgio had no choice this time. Leland scared her to death because Giorgio knows true evil when she sees it.
Mm.
That's pretty
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, good insight.
Yeah, very good insight. So, I got to say this about having, you know, Dr. Gabriel Burnham in that force field and that shared moment. Besides the fact of the interaction with her daughter, the idea of seeing multiple versions of death over and over again, I felt that there was a missed opportunity there to really go into the scarring of that. We talked about that earlier this episode, of her traveling, but, like, having to see your daughter pass away so many times, not only would have... sold like why she was so cold, but maybe like I think would also inform to why she let her go. I felt like it was kind of quick in her mind, saying, look, I understand, I see you in day one, I saw you here, but you gotta let me go. I felt like there'd have been more of a pull out there. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I guess, I mean, seeing Burnham just go through her yeah. mom's data files and seeing all these missions and stuff, looking at
right.
that, it's almost like that. I'd rather show don't tell, where it's like, don't tell me about this. And even though we're watching some view screen representations of her things, it's like, I don't want to see mission logs. I'd rather would have seen her go through this.
Sure.
Show me actually Dr. Burnham going through this. And let me get sucked in a little bit more into her, the dilemma that she's in.
Right.
And I actually thought that that's what they were going to do when they started the episode, you know, when Burnham was mm-hmm. 12. And, you know, when they thought that that's what we were going to spend the whole episode with her family and finding out what happened to them. And I thought that would have been a really good move too.
Yeah.
I would really like to know.
Because yeah. we've spent so much of the season like building up who the Red Angel is and what their importance is.
Right.
To really spend a whole episode really sinking into this character and why they've been doing what they've been doing this whole season.
Yeah.
I think I would have enjoyed that.
I agree.
I want to give a shout out to Beta Artemis helping us out with the Super Chat function in the chat. Thank you so much. That moves on to Spock, right? So as this is going on, he's been kind of aloof during a part of a Mass Patrol episode, but then he comes out to comfort Michael, and we see their relationship evolve even more. So my question for you, I'm going to start with you, Frank. How do you think Spock is taking this interaction between Michael and her actual biological mother and being able to justify those visions he has as a child of the Red Angel?
I mean, certainly Spock gets the answer to something that's been haunting him this whole season. It's about why did the Red Angel choose him since he was a child to start showing him all his visions and... So, yeah, I mean, I feel like he got that answer.
Yeah.
So, which was great to have Spock get that answer. It's also, I mean, and I've enjoyed seeing the Burnham and Spock relationship grow. And so I'm beginning to enjoy their interactions more. But then it still makes me, which I apologize, Nikki, this drives me crazy all the time. It's like Burnham, for all we've known and everything we've seen before in Star Trek, Burnham has never been mentioned. And now we see this, like, what seems to be like, yeah, from a very divided relationship to like really close, at least that seems where it's going. It's only getting closer and closer as we see each episode this season, to then we're never going to hear her, her mentioned again.
Right.
True.
Don't
okay,
get us
on so, it. So, I mean, for real though, I mean, we talked like briefly before the, like last week when I was like, I have some continuity issues with the show.
Right.
I do think that Burnham's mom as the Red Angel, gives Burnham and Spock another point of connection, because this angel was there not just for her, watching over her, but watching over him as well. And so, you know, I think that gives them another place where they can connect. They share this individual that's meant something to both of them. Mm-hmm. I do think I cannot wait to find out how they're going to explain away the fact that we never heard of Burnham before, right?
Yeah. Right?
And so, again, if you're now giving them this other way to connect and this other way to be close with each other, and obviously Spock has tender feelings for her, right? Like, and we never hear from her again?
Do you think that the writers will give us an answer to that, or would it just be like, you know, and I've mentioned this before on the show, that, you know, during those downtimes when we never see Spock on air in the original series, maybe he's having a conversation with Burnham, over the,
chatting with his sister.
Yeah. Would that be enough for you if they never say why they don't talk at all now, or why he's never mentioned her in any of the original series, but you just assume that, oh, yeah, I guess.
No, yeah. I want them to, they need to clarify. I feel like they're working really hard this season to give us, like, the explanation for how all of these things are possible. Some of them I buy, some of them I don't.
Right.
But I need something definitive to explain why she disappears from Spock's story after, you know, from this point of the, like, after this point in the timeline. So,
I mean, I think that's fair. To the writer's credit or discredit out there, wherever you look at it, they've tried to explain hair on Klingons and view screens and the like. It'd be kind of egregious just to be like, oh, yeah, don't worry about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so the tactile ride, the dyslexia comes in together as a device point. Okay, Nick, how do you feel about that? right off the bat.
I'm trying to find out why come we have not found a way to solve dyslexia. Like, we're far enough into the future at this point that, and Spock, who, like, we know Spock really well, and we have not seen any indication of him being dyslexic.
Yeah.
So, I don't buy it.
Mm.
And it's problematic. Like, when Amanda first named the disorder that he had, I Googled, like, what's that? Like, that's got to, and of course, nothing came up.
Because
it's a Vulcan word. But then when she said dyslexia, I legit, while Flovo and I were watching it, I Googled dyslexia to see what causes it and if there's a cure. Because look, it's, why is there no cure for dyslexia? Come on, Star Trek. Come on, y'all. Come on, Discovery. I suspend my disbelief with the best of them.
Right.
I am down. I am committed to this show because I am committed to all things Star Trek except for Enterprise. But
side jab.
How could Spock have dyslexia? I don't understand.
That's true. Yeah, it's modern medicine has gone, made such leaps and bounds in the 23rd century. We should, one of those petty things that we should be able to kind of have eradicated by this point.
Hey, man, I mean, look, the advances in medicine are apparent. You know, we had Hugh Kluber not even working last week. Now he's like the head lead doctor again, so we don't know.
I don't know if we know he's the head doctor. He's working.
He's on duty. He's on duty.
The chat, shout out to the chat. John Saunders asks, when did Spock talk about Cybok until Cybok appeared? So I guess the counterpoint, I guess if the story kind of fits it, you know, we'll have more of that. Nikki's not buying it.
I'm pausing to see what else happens, but.
Yeah, I mean, based at this moment in time and how the relationships are, I mean, certainly Burnham and Spock seem to have a closer relationship than Spock and Cybok ever did.
Yeah.
So for him to never really mention Cybok until he shows up into the Final Frontier, I could buy that. You know, it's he's a half brother. I didn't really know him that well. But for Burnham and Spock, I mean, they're so close that to never hear a mention or reference seems so weird.
Especially since Burnham, what she said to him when he was a child was so devastating and so life changing for him. So that's another thing that they're going to have to, you know, find a way to reconcile for us. Because, you know, Trek fans, we do not play when it comes to.
Do you think that Trek fans are going to band together and have a list of demands like Martin Luther and banging the door at CBS?
We should.
Go out there and riot.
Well, Nikki, I'll ask you because we, like Christian and I, and that's much Flobo because he's, newer to the Star Trek family.
Yeah.
Have had this conversation where one of our sticking points for Discovery is the time and place that it's set. Like if we'd seen something that had taken place after Next Generation,
right.
After J.J. Abrams' first one where we see what happens to Romulus and it explodes.
Mm-hmm.
would you rather have seen a series set at that point as opposed to spending so much time having to try to explain to audiences why this still fits into the narrative and the continuity that they've grown to love?
I would. The reason I couldn't get into Enterprise is because of similar reasons. There were, you know, like prequels only work if you're going to sort of be consistent with what we're looking at technologically, what we're looking at in terms of the culture and the legacy and the history of the show, right? So I would much rather have it had it been after The Next Generation. I get the impulse or the desire to sort of fill in the Star Trek, because, you know, we all have our, you know, fan fiction about Star Trek, right?
Fair enough.
But like it's so cemented that I don't want to say cemented, but it's so well established, you know, that it's so hard to now watch, like, because if you read the books and if you, you know, like, there's so much there already that's in the canon already. Like, it just seems like an impossible job to sort of do a prequel when there's already so much there. When they could have created something after The Next Generation that would have given TNG fans, like, a little, like, oh, life goes on. And also, they could have introduced all this really new, amazing technology that we could be excited about instead mm-hmm. of going, how could they be doing that?
Yeah.
You know?
A wizard did it. As I continue, this time for our special segment. This is a segment I like to call the ABCD Award. That's above and beyond the Call of Duty. We pick one person who did something extraordinary this episode. Nikki, I want to start with you. Who's the one person you think would be the ABCD Award winner of today's episode?
I'm going to give it to Ash. I feel like Ash, he stepped up. He stepped up both in terms of, you know, Burnham saying, you know, her whole thing about who do you want to be. And I think he decided who he's going to be. And the person that he is someone who wants to save the universe instead of just following Leland's orders. So,
yeah. Right for the cause, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. For me, I feel like it's a toss-up between Giorgio and Ash mm-hmm. for the same reasons. And maybe that's just because I really have a soft spot for Michelle Yeoh. But to see her, you know, whipping ass this episode is always great.
Yeah.
So I had to see her actually kind of fighting on the right side for once. It was always nice.
Yeah. I guess I'm like you. I was torn. I'm ultimately going to give it to Ash. He got stabbed for it.
That's true.
I think that's up there. I mean, granted, Giorgio got punched in the face a couple times. That also counts in most things. But, you know, Ash, I feel like he's trying to walk this path the best way he can. He gets pulled left and side. It's like almost like a trapeze act sometimes. And I think today, you know, did the best. He warned the crew and said, hey, look, these people are coming. You know? So let's get right to predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Love that drop. Only a couple episodes left this season. We're heading down to the wire. Frank, I'm going to start with you. Next week or the week after, or even towards the end of the season, what do you think is going to happen to our crew on the Discovery?
You know, We know Pike is leaving at the end of the season. I don't want to see anything that leads up to why he is the way he is when we see him in the menagerie, mm-hmm. where he gets hit with the Delta rays and he gets confined to that wheelchair. I don't need to see that, and I'm sure there will be at least a nod that his future is not looking great, and we saw that this episode.
Right.
But I feel like I don't need to see that. And I've also been reading a lot online about, like, oh wait, can control, especially when they saw the way that Leland got taken over. Is it they're like, oh, could this be kind of related to the Borg at all? Is this kind of like the initial beginnings of the Borg? And I really hope that is not the case. Because,
really? Why so? Like, I'm curious.
Because then
I'm
not, it's like to... everything's just like tied in. I was like, can't the Borg be just some kind of distant alien thing that originated on its own? It doesn't need to be tied into. I feel like these are the writers like, ooh, what if this then was the Borg? What if we created our own worst enemy? Like, yeah.
It would be too neat.
Yes.
Yeah, that's just too neat and orderly. I don't, chaos rules the day. So
I figured like there's like this balance of having those strings to the other franchises and not. So you guys are in agreement that this being the Borg would be a bad idea.
I think so.
Okay. Terrible idea. I was like, I was impressed with whoever thought of it, because I was like, I'd never even thought of it. But I know I've had this fear the whole time that Discovery's been on, that the Borg are going to show up and then I'm going to just be throwing things at the television. But my predictions are I don't even know. We didn't really talk a lot about Control, but like I don't understand how Control has so much ability to impact the physical world, like how with the nano things and the whatever. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing the Discovery figure out how to go for, like, go and find control. And I hope that they don't resolve it this season.
Really? You'd like to see it carry over?
Yeah. I feel like if this is meant, if this is like the, another thing, you know, like this is supposed to be a big moment in history, right? Where the universe almost gets destroyed or all the galaxy does, whatever. They need to, like, I would love to see them build that into it a little bit more. And I would love to see that get, yeah, I'd like to see that go a little further. I'm interested in control and, yeah, and I think it could be fun because, like they're all the rules of the how the universe works. I think control with the right information could break them, and that could be fun.
Do you think that control could be big enough or bad enough to be an enemy for both Discovery and the Section 31 show? Or do you think would you keep it?
I think it could. I think that the challenge might be that we never heard of control before. This. So.
Right. Surprise.
Yeah. So I think it would be great to make it bigger because I think it's interesting, but.
Yeah. About the topic of the Borg versus control, Stress-Free K says, it doesn't make sense that something like the Borg is related to the Red Planet and control's desire for perfection. But Beaver says, please don't let it be the Borg. I saw the little nanites and nanophones immediately came to mind. So it looks like, you know, having some Borg action may not be a good idea. Which for me, for someone, again, I have very, very introductory level experience when it comes to the Borg, right? I've seen the commercials for Voyager, right? As far as I go, 7 or 9, you know, I would be personally excited. But then again, I don't have the other strands to see how that would be necessarily a bad idea. So, I mean, I'm interested both ways and either ways, but I feel like just by the vibe in the room I'm feeling right now, that'd be a bad idea. My predictions real quick. Based on what I saw today with the original landing and the opening sequence and everyone's interaction, I am not sure if the control is him, but I do think Michael's father is involved in some way with control. Mm. I don't think if it's him or if he's like his program or AI. I just feel it's weird when Gabriel was like, don't worry about him. He's all right. You know what I mean? I thought that was kind of shady. And the interaction of recognition when the ship landed in the opening scene, but not like outright terror, to me was a red flag. So Michael's dead. Part of control. Yeah, that's my crazy... Okay. So I want to say thank you so much out there in the chat. You guys always keep this lively, especially the super chats. You guys are amazing. You guys keep Star Trek Weekly, Star Trek Discovery, the after show running. So I want to thank you so much for that. So before we get out of here, I want to say this has been pretty fun being in this chair. I get why Christian does it. It's nice. It's almost
look
like
out, Christian.
I know. So he could be in the second slot next week. Frank, where can the world find you out there on the internet?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
.com or as long as it's just at.
Yeah, just at. Just, cool. Yeah. You know, I mean, give me my Twitter handles at .com. That'd be terrible.
Nikki, we're going to find you online.
You can find me everywhere in the social medias at @NikkiBailey_.
Oh, that's cool. Aflobo Voice on Twitter. It is. Aflobito on Instagram, Flobito.com. And if you guys are living in the Palms neighborhood of Los Angeles, I am running for neighborhood council. I've stepped up.
Flobo.
Yeah.
Flobo.
Hashtag Voice in the Hood. Make sure you go out there and vote June 2nd if you're in the area. And if you're not, that's cool. Visit me at Flobito.com.
One thing that you want to change if you get elected.
I want the small businesses and Palms to be able to look at documentation and rules in simple language. Legalese free.
Nice.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? Of course.
I know who has my vote.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
I don't live there, but that's okay.
Thank you so much for the chat. Thank you so much for the super chats. And until next time, live long and prosper, and buzz you later.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.